What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. For today's episode, we are going to be talking about a story that is really, really difficult to hear. I mean, they're all difficult to hear, but this is one that you may have heard of because it was recently in the news and it happened first in 2019. So I feel like a lot of people, that was kind of, you know, when true crime was becoming more of a popular genre for people to be following and things like that. And so it's just, it's a crazy story. It's so heartbreaking. And like I said, it was recently in the news because a trial just happened. And thankfully a small form of justice was served, but unfortunately it is unlikely that any more justice, well, it's guaranteed pretty much that any more justice will never be seen. So it's frustrating.
I hate that already, and I don't even know what the justices or lack of thereof.
So we'll get all into that. We'll go through the trial and talk about the entire disappearance and murder of Jennifer Farber Dulos. See, I feel like a lot of people probably have heard the name. And
well, I saw it on your TikTok, I think, initially, and then I looked into it a little bit, and then I saw it was on the list, but it was like when the trial ends or whatever. So I was thinking we'd have a little longer. So I don't love that.
Yeah, no, the trial just ended this month. And so I finally put everything together for this. And there's actually another trial that's going to be taking place that I'll talk about, but it could be a long time before that happens. So I decided to cover it, and then we'll update whenever there is an update.
Okay.
But with that, let's just get into it. Jennifer Farber was born on September 27th, 1968, to Gloria Ortenberg and Hilliard Farber. And her parents worked as a banker and philanthropist in New York City, and they lived there with Jennifer and her older sister, Melissa.
Okay.
The family, and this is just not related to, like, the case or Jennifer really, but it, I thought it was interesting. The family was kind of in the fashion industry because Gloria, Jennifer's mother's brother, and his wife, so this was Arthur Ortenberg and Elizabeth Claiborne, founded the fashion company Liz Claiborne Inc., which would later become a small little company you may have heard of called Kate Spade. So just a cool little, like, side note, but I don't think, you know, Jennifer was involved in that at all or anything, but just kind of a neat side note.
That's still neat, a neat connection.
Yeah. So in 1990, Jennifer graduated from Brown University. She was very smart. And she went on to get a master's degree in writing from New York University Tisch School of Arts.
Cool.
While at Brown, though, Jennifer met a man named Fotis. So Fotis Dulos was born on August 6th, 1967 in Turkey. And he grew up for most of his life in Athens, Greece, before moving to the U.S. in 1986.
Wow.
He also attended Brown, and in 1989, he graduated. So that was just the year before Jennifer, and they met during their time there. But they actually didn't get involved at the time. And in fact, Fotis married a woman named Hillary Vanessa Aldema, who was who he also met at Brown in 2000. So Jennifer and Fotis met while at Brown, but they, like, weren't involved, didn't have a relationship or anything. And then 10 years after graduating,
but
Fotis married. Yeah, they knew each other.
Okay.
So in 2000, Fotis married Hillary and also started a real estate development company called Four Group Inc. And the company, which was based in Connecticut, specialized in building luxury homes. So it was like a building company, but then also like some real estate. You know, you think about like homes that are built, new build homes.
Right.
They're built, sold to people as a new build. So it's kind of that's kind of what he was doing.
Okay.
In 2004, Fotis's marriage to Hillary fell apart, and things were kind of deteriorating for a little while, but by the time that they were really moving toward a divorce, he had already been talking with his old friend from Brown, Jennifer Farber, for a few months.
Okay.
They had been emailing back and forth, but it doesn't seem like they actually, you know, got into like a actual relationship while Fotis was still married, but they definitely like no were talking close.
Context or anything like that.
It doesn't seem like it. Maybe some a little bit, but it doesn't seem like it was, you know, Fotis left his marriage because for of her. The relationship he was developing with Jennifer. Yeah, right. It seems like his marriage was falling apart and then he reconnected with Jennifer.
Okay, that makes sense.
Just a month after Fotis's divorce went through in 2004, Jennifer and Fotis got engaged.
Oh, wow.
Or okay. Sorry, they got engaged right after, and then a month after they got married.
Wow. I mean, do whatever makes you happy. Life is short, but also like, I don't know. I feel like you just need a little bit of a breather after.
Yeah. That. The only thing I will say is we don't know how much time Fotis and Hillary were like separated, because maybe they were separated for longer. And then, you know, the divorce took time to like be finalized and everything. So I will just say that.
In some states, like I know in South Carolina, you have to be legally separated for a year before you can get a divorce. So that's a long time to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they got married in Manhattan, New York, and then they moved to Farmington, Connecticut, where they started a family. And they actually ended up having 5 children, including 2 sets of twins.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. Yikes. I knew that you would be like, oh my gosh.
Yikes. I know someone who had back-to-back sets of twins, and I'm like, girl,
that's insane.
Not be me.
Well, and it's like our friend Rachel's mom had multiple sets of twins, and like her mom also had multiple sets of twins, and it's just like, I can't imagine.
So many. Yeah, that's a lot.
That would be a lot. And just another little kind of fun fact, all 5 of the kids are actually named after Greek Orthodox saints. So there's 3 boys, Petros, Theodore, and Constantine, and then 2 girls, Christiane and Cleopatra Noel. So I just thought that was so neat. All their names are beautiful.
I love that. I do.
So eventually Jennifer was a stay-at-home mom raising her 5 children, but she also worked for Patch.com, which is a local news and information platform that's based in Manhattan, New York, but it's all online. So she was able to write articles. And it was actually really interesting because a couple of my sources were from Patch.com.
Okay. Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
They do all types of different local news, but also like more widespread stuff.
Right.
And it's a great website. So she wrote for Patch.com, and then she also ran her own blog that she ran from home.
Okay.
And in that blog in 2012, about 8 years into her marriage to Fotis, Jennifer began writing about some trouble between her and her husband. Mm-hmm. It wasn't direct, like,
detailed.
We're going to get a divorce. Right. But it was kind of alluding to it. So in one post, she wrote, quote, I wish I were a strong person and that confrontation did not both scare and appall me. So it was kind of like alluding to like, maybe there's something going on, but we don't know exactly what. But unfortunately, Jennifer and Fotis's marriage continued to deteriorate, with Fotis, according to Jennifer, wanting to live a more and more independent life away from his family. Mm. In 2017, Jennifer officially filed for divorce, and at that point, she moved out of their home in Farmington and began renting a house in New Canaan, Connecticut, which is about 70 miles away, and she moved there with the 5 children, began living her life as a single mother. In the divorce filings, Jennifer stated that she believed that Fotis was having an affair with his colleague, a woman named Michelle Traconis. And she also wrote, quote, I know that filing for divorce and filing this motion will enrage him. I know he will retaliate by trying to harm me in some way. So she was clearly like afraid for her life. Yeah. And it seems like as the divorce proceedings went on, it just got worse and worse. So she alleged in one filing that Fotis had threatened that if she did not agree to his divorce settlement terms, he would kidnap the children and take them to Greece.
Oh my God, that's terrifying.
Yeah, and in court filings, Jennifer described Fotis as dangerous and described his, quote, irrational, unsafe, bullying, threatening, and controlling behavior. She also noted that Fotis had purchased a gun that year, but he came out and claimed that he had bought it legally for home security, and there wasn't really anything they could do about that.
Right.
And then, of course, he denied making the threats. And both Jennifer and Fotis continued to file motions claiming the other was disparaging them, and it just was getting really messy.
Yeah.
Jennifer and Fotis shared temporary joint custody of the children at first while the divorce proceedings were ongoing. But then in early 2018, Jennifer once again requested for an emergency order of custody for the children, likely because of that fear that she had that Fotis was going to, like, kidnap them.
Right.
And in the hearing for that emergency order, the judge found that Fotis had violated several court orders. So in March 2018, Jennifer was granted sole physical custody of the children, while Fotis and Jennifer maintained legal split custody, basically meaning he would still have to support them.
Right.
And he was granted supervised visits and monitored phone calls with his kids while the divorce proceedings were continuing to happen.
And I bet that sent him into a tailspin.
Yep, because he wasn't getting what he wanted and it wasn't going the right way that he wanted.
Right.
In February 2018, Jennifer's father, Hilliard, passed away. And her mother, Gloria Farber, after this, sued Fotis for the $1.7 million in loans that he had not paid them back. So he had borrowed a lot of money from his in-laws, and when Hilliard passed away, Gloria was like, we need this money back, and so she sued Fotis for it. And that lawsuit took a really long time to go to trial. It didn't happen until December 2019, but just a note that Fotis was definitely in debt, and it said in some sources that he had up to $7 million in debt.
Wow. For what? What are you doing?
Yeah. Unclear if that's like his business and his personal debt, because if it's business, true, like that would make a little bit more sense. But yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And over the next 15 months, unfortunately, things between Jennifer and Fotis remained contentious. They were living apart, with the children living with Jennifer in New Canaan. And Fotis was also dating that colleague, Michelle Traconis. Dude. And eventually, Michelle Traconis moved in to the home in Farmington where Fotis lived and where Jennifer used to live with her 10-year-old daughter. At around 8 o'clock a.m. on May 24th, 2019, Jennifer dropped her kids off at New Canaan Country School like she did every morning. She was seen on a neighbor's security camera returning home at 8:05, and that was the last time she would ever be seen. That day, Jennifer missed two different doctor's appointments she had scheduled at 11 a.m. and 1 p.m., which was not like her. The children's nanny, Lauren Almeida, became concerned about Jennifer when she didn't return home that night. So she had arrived, Lauren had arrived at Jennifer's home at 11:30, and she at first was surprised to see Jennifer's Range Rover still at the house. So Jennifer had two cars, a Range Rover and a Chevy Suburban, and Lauren knew that Jennifer had planned to take the Range Rover into the city for her doctor's appointments, but the Range Rover was there and the Chevy was missing. So while at first it wasn't like weird that Jennifer wasn't there because Lauren knew she had those doctor's appointments in the city.
Right.
She was like, that's kind of weird, but like maybe she just changed her mind, wanted to take the right Chevy, whatever. But by 7 p.m., when Jennifer still wasn't home and several of her friends hadn't heard from her, she became more concerned. Jennifer was also supposed to meet her mom at her apartment in the city after her appointments, and she never showed up. And then also Lauren had brought the kids to that apartment to meet Jennifer and her mom, and Jennifer right wasn't there. So at that point, Lauren and then some of Jennifer's friends reported her missing to police. And it did not take too long for searches for Jennifer to begin. After about, like, I think 2 days of searching, canine units were finding no sign of her and just no sign of her in general in the searches. So they officially issued a silver alert for her. And this was after her Chevy Suburban, the car that was missing from her garage. The car was found just like 3 miles down the road from Jennifer's home with no sign of Jennifer.
Not good.
When police arrived at Jennifer's New Canaan home and searched it, they found evidence of blood spatter in the garage. So there was blood spatter evidence on the floor, door, and one wall of the garage. And they also found blood spatter evidence on the exterior of the Range Rover that was still in the garage. And then inside the home, they found blood spatter on the kitchen faucet. And investigators also found that other evidence inside the garage pointed to Jennifer being the victim of a serious assault. And this was obviously very concerning because she was still missing.
Right. Now, was the blood splatter, like, had it been cleaned up and they were able to, like, Luminol test it? Okay.
Yep, that's exactly what they did. It had been cleaned up. They had Luminol tested it. And the nanny, Lauren, noted that a couple of, like, paper towel rolls that she had restocked in the pantry just the day before were gone. So it seemed somebody had tried to clean up something.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was, like, super obvious. Like, I don't think when you walked in into the naked eye, you could see blood spatter. But I don't think it was too difficult for them to find it once they did the Luminol testing and, like, you know.
Well, that's what I was wondering. So I was like, well, the nanny was there. It must have been cleaned up because she would have seen something. But
exactly. Wow. It was definitely cleaned up to the naked eye. Investigators found that the Chevy was seen leaving the New Canaan home at 10:25 a.m., but it is not believed that Jennifer was the one driving the car out of the neighborhood, although they couldn't see the driver, so they don't know for sure. Now, the obvious initial suspect was Fotis Doulos.
Mm-hmm.
Investigators learned that him and his now ex-wife had been through this contentious divorce and that there was still resentment between the two. They also learned about the threats that Jennifer claimed he made, and while Fotis continued to deny these, this made him an even more likely suspect. So with this, investigators began looking more into Fotis Doulos and where he was on May 24th, 2019. And that's when they found the now infamous video footage of him driving around Hartford, Connecticut.
No.
Fotis and his then-girlfriend, Michelle Traconis, were seen driving around the city in Fotis's truck on the evening of May 24th. And in the footage, he can be seen getting out of the car and dumping garbage bags into various bins. And it's reported that he is seen doing this 30 different times.
What?
So, like, basically making different stops and throwing garbage bags into 30 different trash bins.
Yeah. And, oh my God, that's not a good sign at all.
No. And they were able to trace this video footage because they traced his phone, which pinged back and forth between several properties he owned in Farmington during the day and then all around Hartford in the evening. So they got his phone pings. They were then able to find surveillance footage of him dumping all these trash bags. Yeah. And then they were able to recover those trash bags from the Mira trash plant in Hartford. And when they opened the bags inside were various pieces of bloodied clothing and bloodstained cleaning items.
Oh, okay. Whew. I thought we were going in a different direction with that, but
no,
still. Okay.
So by this point, investigators had an idea of what happened. So they theorized that Fotis Doulos drove his car to New Canaan that day, parked it a bit away from Jennifer's house, and then rode his bike up to her house because nobody was seen driving up to the house on the neighbor surveillance footage. So they believe he basically rode the bike kind of like around the back so that
he probably knew where the cameras were too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They believe he laid in wait, waiting for her to return from dropping the kids off at school. And when she did, he attacked her in the garage, restrained her with zip ties, and murdered her.
What the fuck?
They believe he then used her Chevy to drive her body away from the home and dispose of it. Then he abandoned her car, picked up his car, and put all of the bloodied evidence into garbage bags that he disposed of while driving his car around Hartford that same evening.
How can you murder the mother of your children?
Like, I know.
Do you understand, like, the capacity of that? Like, as a father, as a human being, like, that is, well, obviously it's not okay, but, like, that is such a huge thing. Like, how do you do that? How do you do that? You love this woman.
Your children.
Yeah. Like, how do you do that? Like, is your pride that big that you have to succumb to, like, such a horrible thing?
Apparently so, because, yeah, absolutely sick.
So sick.
This story was confirmed when testing of all of the different blood evidence came back as a positive match to Jennifer. So this included the blood spatter in the garage, the items found inside the disposed trash bags, the clothing, and the cleaning items all had blood belonging to Jennifer. And then the blood spatter on the kitchen faucet was a mix of Jennifer's and Fotis's.
Mm-hmm. So he injured himself.
Mm-hmm. Additionally, the inside of a glove that was inside one of the trash bags had DNA belonging to Fotis Doulos. And then his DNA was also found on one of the other bags.
What an idiot. I mean, I'm glad, but, you know.
7 days after Jennifer's disappearance, Fotis Doulos was arrested on June 1st, 2019. He was arrested at a hotel in Avon, Connecticut, where he was staying with Michelle Traconis, his girlfriend, who was in the car when he was driving around disposing of those trash bags.
Right.
Michelle Traconis was also arrested, and they were both charged with tampering with evidence and hindering prosecution. Because at this time, at that point, there was not enough evidence to warrant any more serious charges because Jennifer had not been found. Both Doulos and Traconis pleaded not guilty to the charges, and then they were rearrested in September 2019 and charged with tampering with evidence and once again pleaded not guilty. They were let out on bail, and in October 2019, while out on bail, it was reported that Michelle Traconis and her 10-year-old daughter moved out of Fotis's home in Farmington, where they had been living, so it appeared that the relationship between the two had ended.
Well, too late. You're involved. Like, yeah, like what?
Yeah. After the initial arrests, Fotis's attorney, Norm Pattis, alleged that Jennifer had likely created her own kidnapping in a, quote, Gone Girl style plot to frame her estranged husband.
Okay, we've heard this before. Mm-hmm. Different case. That's not what all women strive to do.
No, and nobody believed it. This was just his attorney trying to claim something.
Grasping at straws. Yeah.
Yeah. So according to The Independent, quote, Pattis claimed that the defense had found a very dark novel written by Jennifer, which mirrored the plot of Gone Girl, where a woman fakes her own death to frame her husband for his infidelity. He claimed Jennifer had the imagination, means, and motive to disappear, which was just ridiculous. And Jennifer's family and friends were like, no way, this is not true. And they pointed out that that novel that was found was written 17 years prior. And she's a writer. So it's not like.
And like, you write things that are completely out of your like reality.
Yeah. No, it had no merit. It was just grasping. His lawyer grasping at straws.
Desperation. Because he knew. He's like, my person don't have nothing to grab onto.
Yeah, exactly. And while Fotis and Michelle Traconis were out on bail, the investigation into them continued. Unfortunately, though, there was no physical evidence because her body had not been found. And, you know, there was the blood evidence, but you could explain that DNA. Away.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
But the investigation continued on, And on January 7th, 2020, over a year and a half after Jennifer disappeared, Fotis Doulos was officially rearrested and charged with murder. So this time he was arrested at his home and he was charged with capital murder, murder, and kidnapping. And at this point, Michelle Traconis was also arrested and charged with conspiracy to commit murder.
And still nobody.
Nope. Despite these serious charges, though, Fotis Doulos was granted a $6 million bond, and he was able to post bail, and he was released on bail and set to return to court on February 28th, 2020. On January 28th, he was ordered to report to court for an emergency bond hearing, but he didn't show up.
Let me guess.
So authorities arrived at his home to collect him, and they found him in an unresponsive state. Fotis Doulos had taken his own life, and despite first responders restoring a faint pulse after doing CPR and Fotis being on life support for 2 days, he was pronounced dead on January 30th, 2020.
Those poor kids, man. What the fuck?
Why was he released on bail? He was charged with murder.
Yeah. I mean.
And I get that it was a $6 million bond, but like we know that he has a successful building company. Right. So
yeah. That was easy.
Yeah. Fotis Doulos left a suicide note in which he maintained his innocence and said, quote, "I refuse to spend even an hour more in jail for something I had nothing to do with."
What?
Yep.
Okay, then what? Michelle did it on her own?
Mm-hmm.
That was alluding to?
Ridiculous.
Yeah, cowardly. And why do that to your wife if you're just going to, or ex-wife, or soon-to-be ex-wife, if you're just going to take your own life?
Because he thought he could get away with it, and then when he realized he wasn't going to get away with it, he couldn't handle it.
Yep. Narcissist at its finest.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, because he was no longer alive, he could not be convicted of Jennifer's murder.
The no justice.
Yeah. After Fotis's death, Michelle Traconis released a statement saying that it was a mistake to trust him. And she continued to maintain that she knew nothing about Jennifer's death. So she was claiming that she was unaware of what Fotis was doing during that car ride when he was disposing of the trash bags.
Girl, what'd you think he was doing?
Yeah, exactly. And that is basically what this whole trial that recently took place is all about.
Okay.
So Michelle Traconis has continued to maintain her innocence, and her family has supported her as well, saying in a statement in late 2023, quote, "We are heartbroken and deeply troubled following the revelations from the recent hearing. We learned that there were other uncharged suspects and that someone close to Fotis Doulos was granted immunity through a verbal agreement back in 2019 by the former chief state prosecutor without any thorough investigation. Our hearts ache," and we will touch on that other suspect.
Okay.
"Our hearts ache as we see the focus unfairly narrowing only to our beloved daughter, Michelle. Despite her earnest cooperation with the police back in 2019, she has been enduring these burdensome charges for over 4.5 years. It's agonizing for us to watch our innocent daughter suffer under the weight of a system that seems to be turning a blind eye to justice. We plead with everyone involved, especially the investigators, to see the pain and injustice being inflicted upon Michelle and to reconsider the direction of their pursuit. Our family's plea is simple. Seek the truth and fairness that Michelle so rightly deserves."
That's a joke. I'm sorry. Like, you were placed at the scene of the dumps, him dumping the evidence. I'm sorry. There's just no way
that you.
First
had no
of all,
clue.
I would be like, what the hell are you doing? Like, why are you doing? What are you doing? And if you are an idiot, if you act like you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
She was in on it. I believe that with my whole heart.
Yeah. And she would later claim, or I think it was during her police interviews, but she said like, oh, we would like drive around and dispose of trash before. And I'm like, you didn't drive to 30 trash cans. I'm sorry, but there's no way that you did it that much.
And why? Why would you drive around to 30 trash cans to dispose of trash?
Yeah. The same day that his ex-wife goes missing.
Yeah.
So on October 4th, 2023, Michelle Tracones tweeted, quote, it's been 4.5 years since I was wrongly accused. Today, I stand here with my family and friends by my side. Their love and support keep me strong. I have faith in justice and the jury system, and I'm ready to finally move forward with this trial. Mm. And that trial took a very long time, 4.5 years, thanks to COVID and other delays. But her trial officially began on January 11th, 2024 in Stamford, Connecticut. She was facing 6 counts related to Jennifer Doulos's disappearance and death. So this included conspiracy to commit murder, 2 counts of conspiracy to commit tampering with physical evidence, 2 counts of tampering with physical evidence, and hindering prosecution. And like I kind of just said, the main question in the trial was, did Michelle Tracones know what Fotis Doulos was doing driving around Hartford? So the beginning of the trial was mainly focused on setting up the crime and proving that Fotis Doulos was the one who murdered Jennifer. Because remember, it's believed that that's what happened, but he cannot be charged or convicted. And her attorney actually argued that Jennifer should be referred to as an alleged victim because her body had still not been found. And technically there was no conviction for her murder.
That irritates me because they found copious amounts of blood splatter, which would indicate that somebody was severely injured and likely succumbed to those injuries.
Exactly.
And I don't know how he was, you know, smart enough to hide her body without it being found when he was so stupid to dump these, you know, evidence bags all around town with CCTV footage and cell phone pings, you know, running rampant. But her body is out there somewhere. And I think it's probably, I mean, it's been what, 5 years now? 4.5 years now?
Yeah.
But she knows where that body is. And if she doesn't, she has a good idea, I feel like.
I agree. But
allegedly.
Yeah. The trial was a lot. So to kind of set up what we know, in Tracones' arrest warrant, authorities claim that she changed her story in 3 separate police interviews. So we will go through those in a little bit because they were played during the trial.
Good, good.
She also claimed in her police interviews that after Jennifer was reported missing, her and Fotis wrote what is called the alibi scripts. Oh. So this basically was a script that detailed their whereabouts on the day she went missing. Now, Tracones claims that they did this at the urging of a lawyer in case they would be questioned, essentially saying like, you know, once Jennifer went missing, the lawyer was like, hey, you should probably write down your whereabouts from this morning so that you remember because you might be questioned. So, like, okay, I could kind of maybe see that, but she would later claim that the details written in those alibi scripts were not true.
Yeah. And, like, when you have, like, when something major like that happens, I mean, yes, obviously we, like, trauma block it out, but
you're going to remember.
You remember so much more vividly, I feel like, when something like that happens. So you shouldn't really need to write it down.
No. And even if you did, why did you lie about it?
Yeah.
So.
It's not a good look, sweetheart. Not a good look.
No. So during the trial, the jury was shown footage of Fotis Doulos disposing of the garbage bags while Michelle Tracones was in the car. And she can clearly be seen in the car.
Yeah.
They also showed video footage that appears to show Trakonis disposing of a bag in a storm drain, and that package was later found to have old license plates inside that had been removed from what is believed to be Fotis's car. However, unfortunately, it's not a very clear image of her, and her defense argued, and was, in my opinion, able to argue pretty effectively, that it wasn't clear enough to prove anything. So unfortunately, yeah, that didn't really lead anywhere.
You know what's wild to me is that they have like a map of where they went that day. I mean, I feel like he had to have disposed of her body that same day, though.
At some point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like, were they not able to find a desolate location that they went to? And like, what are the odds of that? Unfortunately,
because of the work that Fotis did, I mean, it could be possible that he was mm-hmm. able to hide her body yeah. on, like, a construction site or something like that.
That is a very, very good point. My husband, like, he has said that, like, mm-hmm. surveyor would know where to get rid of a body. Yeah. Like, yeah, you know, not so. Him personally, but, like, you know.
Yeah. No, I feel like it's very possible that he did that.
You know these areas. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
So Trakonis's defense focused on the lack of physical evidence to connect her to Jennifer's murder because, I mean, I will admit, too, there's not really physical evidence connecting her because her DNA wasn't found on any of the bags or her blood wasn't found. Like, there's no direct physical evidence. Yeah,
I think
he acted alone.
I do think when he murdered yes. her, he acted alone. Now, was she there waiting somewhere? Probably, but not at the actual yeah. house. That's what I think.
Her attorney, Joe Schoenhorn, acknowledged that she was in the truck while Fotis was disposing of the bags, but claimed that she did not know what was inside of them. He argued that she was on her phone during the majority of the car ride and that she believed that Fotis was driving the couple to Starbucks.
What?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
30 stops.
Yeah. One witness that testified was Lauren Almeida, the children's nanny, who also worked at Fotis's business. And she testified about the relationship between Jennifer and Fotis, saying that in 2017, when Jennifer learned of his affair with Michelle, that the dynamic between the couple changed. She testified that it was uncomfortable to be in the presence of both of them, and she corroborated Jennifer's claims that she had made in the divorce filings of Fotis's threats. On day 10 of the trial, the focus somewhat shifted to Michelle Trakonis's involvement. After that, they still showed other evidence and stuff, but at that point, they were focusing on her involvement and knowledge of what Fotis was doing when driving around Hartford. So Schoenhorn had actually tried to get her initial police interrogation dismissed, claiming that during that interrogation, she was tired and that the interviews were conducted in English, which is her second language. But the judge allowed the videos of her police interview in the trial.
Okay. What's her first language?
Just Spanish. Oh. She's from Venezuela.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
So the prosecution pointed out, when showing these interviews, that Trakonis's timeline described that she described her whereabouts of May 24th changed each of the three times she was interviewed. She also said that on the evening of the 24th, when they were driving around, again, she was on her phone and wasn't paying attention to what Fotis was doing and where he was throwing the garbage bags out. She claimed she didn't see or smell anything to indicate what was inside the bags. So she's saying she had no idea. In her second interview that was played for the jury during the trial, she said, quote, "I went as a companion. If I knew he was going to do something wrong, I would have never walked into that car." She also continued to claim that she did not know where Jennifer was. In her third interview, she stated, quote, "I have no idea what happened to Jennifer. I have no idea where Jennifer is, and that's 100%. I just know that I went as the stupid girlfriend to help him out because he told me, come and clean the house. I did. Let's go to Starbucks. I did."
clean the house? So, like the
that mm-hmm.
What?
So that stuck out to me too. Girl. But I don't think there's any proof that she was at the house. Like they can't prove whether or not yeah. she was, so they weren't able to connect her.
So that was like a little like Freudian slip.
Yeah. Kind of seems like it. So one witness for the prosecution that testified was a man named Paul Gumeni, who worked for Fotis's company. And he testified that Fotis and Trakonis were upset with Jennifer in May 2019 because she would not allow the children to visit the terminally ill family dog at Fotis's home. So that kind of gives more of a motive aside from just the like initial, you know, contentious divorce. It was kind of right. like that was the turning point.
Was it because like it wasn't his time or she was just being petty or do we
I think
know,
it was
really?
That I think that it wasn't his time. He had those scheduled supervised visits and she right. wasn't going to budge on that because she was afraid that he was going to like kidnap the kids.
Yeah. And I don't blame her one fucking bit. He threatened to take them out of the country. And once they're out of the country, it's going to be really hard to get them back.
Exactly. Exactly. So, according to CBS News, quote, Gumeni testified that Trakonis used aggressive language and slurs when talking about Jennifer Doulos in the context of that situation. She said, that bitch should be buried right next to the dog. A few days after the disappearance, Gumeni testified that Trakonis said, I'm going to kill that fucking bitch when she turns up when talking about Jennifer Doulos.
Oh my God. Wow.
The prosecution also pointed out that the car that Fotis drove on the evening of May 24th was actually Gamini's work truck. And it wasn't uncommon for him to borrow this car, but they believed that Fotis was basically trying to frame Gumeni because he had shaved his head similar to
what?
How Gumeni had his hair. And he adopted Gamini's like clothing style. And so the prosecution alleged that he was doing that to try to turn suspicion away from himself and onto Gumeni.
Wow.
And that was that other witness that Michelle's family mentioned, or other suspect that Michelle's family mentioned when they said there were uncharged suspects, someone close to Fotis that was granted immunity. Because Gumeni was granted immunity in exchange for his testimony. But he didn't need it because he was not charged at all.
There was nothing to place him
there. To point
there.
To him. No.
That is insane. I would not call that a suspect.
No.
That you're talking out of your ass on that. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just trying to point everything away from Michelle.
Yeah.
So the trial went on for almost 8 weeks. And on March 1st, 2024, after less than 3 days of deliberation, Michelle Trakonis was found guilty on all 6 counts.
Wow.
Her bond was set to $6 million and sentencing is currently scheduled to take place on May 31st. And she is facing a maximum penalty of 50 years if her sentences are set to be run consecutively and 20 years if they run concurrently.
Wow.
While the verdict was read, Trakonis sat with her head down, crying, as one of her lawyers rubbed her back. She could be heard sobbing as she rested her head on the table after the verdict was read. And her family said after the verdict that they were shocked and angered by the decision, claiming that they believe her innocence and that she did not know anything about what Fotis Doulos did. She is currently still in custody at the York Correctional Institution in Connecticut, and if she were to post bail, she would be required to wear a GPS ankle monitor and be on house arrest, but it doesn't seem like she's going to be able to post bail.
Well, that's good.
She was also back in court on March 21st, just last week, for a hearing on contempt of court. So this hearing was regarding, quote, allegations that Trakonis displayed a sealed court document related to Jennifer and Fotis Doulos' divorce case on her laptop during her trial. So this is just like another charge. And if she's convicted of contempt of court, she will get an additional 6 month sentence. Michelle Trakonis continues to maintain her innocence.
Well, yeah.
Her attorney, John Schoenhorn, has said that he plans to file a motion for a new trial before her sentencing takes place in May. He claims that there were several errors in her trial, including where the trial was held and some of the motions granted. So he said, quote, there's at least 20 different rulings, and I'm going back to the rulings by other judges in this courthouse, starting with when it was brought in the wrong courthouse. So he's going to try everything he can
to call it. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's going to try everything he can. And if his motion for a new trial is denied, he will likely file an appeal. After the verdict, Schoenhorn said, quote, I truly just don't see how the jury could have reached this verdict. And I will say, I was surprised. I thought that the prosecution did a really good job. And I do believe Michelle Traconis at least had some knowledge of what was going on. Like you said, I don't think that she was involved in the actual murder, but that's not what she was charged with. She was charged with conspiracy and, you know, tampering with her evidence. And I do think she was involved. But and I was surprised.
Crime scene, like she implicated herself. She said, I just was coming to clean the house. Like, what?
But yeah.
What are you saying right now? Like you know what blood looks like. Like if you were cleaning up blood, bitch, you know. Like you knew what you were doing. And
how do you not think twice about him disposing of trash bags on the day his ex-wife went missing? Like
That simple fact in and of itself.
Yeah, I think she knew. I think that he maybe didn't directly say, I'm going to murder her, but I think she knew that he was going to her house that day and was going to do something. And when Jennifer went missing, Michelle should have said, something's wrong here.
Something ain't right here, yeah. It's awful.
Friends and family of Jennifer Dulos are thankful Michelle Traconis was convicted. However, they have also pointed out that this is not the end. In a statement after the verdict, Carrie Luft, one of Jennifer's friends, spoke on behalf of Jennifer's family and friends. So I'm going to read you her entire statement because I think it's important to hear. She said, quote, today's verdict is a crucial attribution of accountability, not a victory. There can be no victory when five children are growing up without their mother. This verdict represents the meticulous collection, analysis, and presentation of evidence to illuminate a series of crimes. That immense body of evidence also serves to highlight the gaps that remains in this case. Most important, that Jennifer Farber Dulos has still not been found. We have lost a mother, daughter, sister, cousin, and cherished friend. Jennifer's loved ones cannot bury her next to her father. We want to thank the jury for their commitment and careful deliberation during this lengthy, complex trial, and Judge Kevin Randolph for his guidance and authority in the courtroom. We remain deeply indebted to the state's attorney's office, in particular prosecutors Michelle Manning and Sean McGinnis, Assistant State Attorney Elizabeth Morin, and Case Inspector David Edwards, for their tireless work, expertise, endurance, and dedication in the courtroom and out. We express our unending gratitude and respect to the investigators, analysts, and other law enforcement personnel who have shown unflagging commitment to Jennifer's case over a span of nearly 5 years. We owe a special debt of thanks to those individuals, law enforcement and civilian, who testified at this trial and in its hearings. Your courage and integrity inspire us. Many questions remain as we approach the 5-year marker. It is our hope that the resurgent public interest in this case might spur new, viable leads. In the meantime, Jennifer's grace, goodness, and light live on through her children and through the honor of her memory. We ask that you respect Jennifer's memory and the privacy of her family and loved ones at this time.
My heart breaks for her kids, man.
No sign of Jennifer has been seen since her disappearance on May 4th, 2019. Searches of various properties near Fotis' home in Farmington and around New Canaan have turned up nothing. There has been no activity on her cell phones or credit cards. And while her body has never been found, Jennifer Dulos was officially declared dead in October 2023. After Jennifer's disappearance, her mother, Gloria Farber, was granted temporary custody of her five children. After Fotis' death, Gloria was declared their legal guardian, and she now cares for them in New York City. One friend of Jennifer's recently said about the kids, quote, they're very impressive young people and they are going to do amazing things. Mm. 88-year-old Gloria Farber testified at Michelle Traconis's trial, and her testimony, while it lasted less than 10 minutes, was inspiring because she described how her daughter was a loving and caring mother who would never willingly leave her children. She also testified how Jennifer was planning to meet her at her apartment that day, so it makes no sense that she left on her own accord, because right. they were still trying to say that.
Yeah, of course they were.
Now, I also want to note that there was another arrest in the case. So on that same day in January 2020, when Fotis Doulos and Michelle Traconis were arrested and charged with murder and conspiracy, Fotis's friend and former attorney, a man named Kent Douglas Mahinney, was also arrested in connection to the case. So he had a bit of a history. His estranged wife had previously gone to police to report that she had been afraid her husband and Fotis were trying to kill her. She was concerned for her life, and when police searched a secluded property that Mahinney owned, they found a shallow grave that was filled with two bags of lime and blue tarp.
Yeah. What?
Isn't that so scary?
They searched the whole ground?
Yeah.
Damn.
He had already been kind of like
involved.
Suspicious, and his estranged wife actually accused him of sexual assault, and he was arrested and charged with violating a protective order in 2018. So he was arrested in January 2020 in connection to Jennifer's disappearance when it was determined that his name appeared in both Michelle and Fotis's alibis for the morning Jennifer was reported missing. He initially claimed that he did not have a meeting scheduled with Fotis that morning, but then he later changed his story, saying that they had scheduled a meeting and that he arrived at Fotis's home just before 8 a.m. And he claimed that he waited for Fotis to arrive for an hour, but he never did, and that he left without him, or he left without seeing any signs of him. So because of all of this, and because of his potential believed involvement, in 2020, he was arrested and charged with conspiracy to commit murder. And Kent Mahinney is currently awaiting a trial since he has pleaded not guilty.
I mean, that's like nothing to go on, basically. It's all very circumstantial and coincidental, but it's like too coincidental for me not to think he could potentially be involved.
And I do think that there's more that they have that hasn't come out.
Yeah.
So yeah. We'll see, but that trial could take a while to happen.
Wow. Yeah. That's insane.
Jennifer Farber Doulos was just 50 years old when she was murdered. A memorial for her still stands at the West Hartford Reservoir in Connecticut. And it only grew in size with more people contributing during the trial this year. In 2021, a new Connecticut law was enacted called Jennifer's Law to honor both Jennifer Doulos and another victim of domestic violence, a woman named Jennifer Magnano. And this law does a whole bunch of things. One thing that it does is establishes a general definition of domestic violence that includes coercive control as a form of domestic violence. And it does a lot of things to protect victims of domestic violence. It makes criminal violation of a protection order a family violence crime. It prescribes a specific notice that must be provided to each person who receives a family violence protective order. It provides an alternative means for obtaining testimony from a protected person. And it created a grant program to provide free legal assistance to restraining order applicants, which is just incredible.
Yeah. Is that just in Connecticut or is that nationwide?
Yeah, this is a specific Connecticut law.
Okay. Why are these laws not?
I know. Federal. It's harder to pass, you know, federal, like, laws, though.
I know. Yeah. But it's just like, it's like the common sense, I feel like.
I know. Jennifer was loved by many. One friend described her as, quote, a person who shows up. She really seemed to be the best mother to her five children, extremely kind and compassionate and very giving. And she is missed by everyone who knew her.
So heartbreaking.
Like I said at the top of the episode, some form of justice was served, but it doesn't feel complete, and it never will, because Fotis Doulos will never be charged.
Yeah. Fucking coward. Like, that's always so frustrating to me, to like do some heinous crime and then take your own life because you're not, you're too much of a coward to
face it.
Yeah. Like, you do the, what do they say? You do the crime, you pay the time. Like, you got caught. You weren't that smart. So.
Exactly. It's, I mean, we always go back to this, but it's like Ariel Castro and just so many cowards that do this. And it's.
That one really just burns my, whatever that saying is, burns my bottom. No, that's not it.
I don't know that saying.
I don't either, evidently.
But yeah, it is so frustrating. If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. For more information on resources on how you can seek help for someone in your life, you can also visit CT Coalition Against Domestic Violence at ctcadv.org. Jennifer was such an incredible person, and her life was taken by a coward. And it's so frustrating. And her family, I mean, while they know what happened, they are still fighting for her body to be found. They want to lay her to rest with her father. And, you know, like her friend said in the statement, hopefully this verdict will just kind of reinvigorate things, and that one day she will be found.
Yeah, I hope so.
But that is all I have for you guys today. Thank you so much for listening and for being here. We will have a brand new case for you later this week. And until then, keep it human.
Bye, guys.